You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A few days ago, Andrew Little announced plans to change the current law on prisoner voting rights in time for the 2020 election, which will allow prisoners serving sentences of 3 years or under to vote. This change comes after a landmark decision by the Supreme Court in the case Taylor and Attorney General, where Arthur Taylor, a high-profile prisoner, sued the Attorney General, arguing the ban went against their voting rights under the Bill of Rights. The Supreme Court agreed and issued a declaration saying the law was inconsistent with New Zealand's Bill of Rights. However, they could not act to strike down the law as it was correctly passed by Parliament. Following this 2018 decision and a recent decision by the Waitangi Tribunal finding the legislation also at odds with the Treaty of Waitangi, Parliament has finally announced they will act, granting voting rights back to prisoners serving sentences of 3 years or under. I discussed the shift first with Law Professor Edward Willis from the University of Auckland, and then with Arthur Taylor, a former prisoner who first brought this debate to Parliament almost 5 years ago. I started by asking him why he thinks Parliament took so long to respond.
I think we're going to deal with political realities here. I mean, I think we pretty much all know that there was a white elephant in the corner in the form of Winston and New Zealand First. I think they took some persuading that they wouldn't lose any votes over this issue.
Would you see their responses, of course, prompted by the case which you, along with some other prisoners, brought to the High Court?
Oh, absolutely. If the litigation hadn't been undertaken and the case hadn't been taken to the Waitangi Tribunal, nothing would have happened. We'd still have this obnoxious law on our books.
Yeah, so you brought the case to the High Court along with some other prisoners while you were still in prison. How did this come about?
Well, I read an article by one of our foremost electoral law commentators, Andrew Geddes. He's a prominent academic on the staff at Otago University. An article called J'accuse, and it basically made the point that this law, there was no justification for it, and it was, you know, if it stayed on in the New Zealand statute books, it was an indelible stain on our democracy. But Andrew came to the conclusion that nothing could really be done about it.
And you decided otherwise? Or how did you realise that there was sort of an avenue for you to go against it?
I looked into it and I saw that our New Zealand Bill of Rights guarantees the right to vote in Section 12 of the New Zealand Bill of Rights, guarantees every New Zealand citizen over the age of 18 the right to vote. It doesn't say everyone except prisoners. I realised there was a legal avenue there for, enforcing that Section 12 right over and above the 2010 ban on prisoners voting that was put onto the Electoral Act.
And was there strong sentiment in the prison, or do you think there is currently as well strong sentiment towards being given voting rights?
There is now. Obviously, prisoners have a lot of things on their minds day to day in prison besides, talking about politics and things. But slowly, as they've seen all the significant publicity around this, they've seen that they've got a lot more interested in it. Now, a lot of our prison wings you hear talks about politics and things on the outside rather than what robbery deal or what drug deal or whatever they might be wanting to get involved in when they get out.
So at the time when you brought this litigation, there wasn't really a strong sort of sentiment in the prison?
No, but we started seeing the results. We started before the 2014 election down this path, and I managed to get a High Court decision out of Justice Ellis and used words. She said this, although the courts couldn't do anything about it, she thought, they had to apply the law and the Electoral Act. She saw this, she said, I wasn't a lone voice in the wilderness. She said that this law is constitutionally objectionable. So with those words ringing in my ears from a High Court judge, I knew I was on the right path.
Yeah. And, I mean, besides Justice Ellis, with the Supreme Court as well agreeing that it's at odds with our Bill of Rights and that it's a right which shouldn't be removed.
That's right.
Yeah, but some people still see this as part of the punishment. So I saw that Simon Bridges says National plans to change the law back, and they believe that if you do a crime, you should lose your rights. But what is your response to this line of reasoning?
That's a good soundbite, but you start thinking about it. It's not necessarily what we saw. I can understand the notion of removing someone's liberty through imprisonment, you know, restricting their freedom and using confinement as a punishment to protect public safety.
Mm.
However, if you accept this argument, removing the right from prisoners to vote has nothing to do with protecting public safety. You know, how's that going to protect public safety, removing their vote? I mean, they're in prison, that's the punishment. But there's an underlying premise that in a democracy, all people should have a voice, a right to speak to the collective good of society. And I think society can greatly benefit by listening to those who are most affected by, you know, the social determinants of crime and those who have lived and have the experience of how the criminal justice system operates, the real experience of that. And these, of course, sharp blows at the sharp end of the prisoners.
Yeah, so for a varied view in a democracy.
Yes, I mean, and another thing that drove me on, always drove me on, was that and this was a very bad precedent. I mean, here was Parliament, you know, supposedly acting on behalf of the public of New Zealand, and supposedly in the public good, because, I mean, you don't pass laws that aren't in the public good, do you? You know, saying, we're going to remove your right to vote, the most fundamental right in a democracy, not because of really what anything you've done, but because you're part of a group. Now, the moment you start removing your fundamental rights from groups, rather than subjectively from an individual, that is a dangerous precedent. Prisoners today, I thought, well, hey, maybe it could be, you know, who knows, gay people tomorrow. Who knows what a future government might do? It's all as ridiculous as it sounds.
What do you see as sort of benefits of allowing prisoners to vote?
Well, because they have a voice, however little, and what's going on in the community, it's like a connection between them and the community. They start taking interest in what's going on in the community. And they've all got whānau family on the outside. You know, they want to have a say perhaps in, you know, education policies, employment, access to housing, all those sort of things. Even if that voice is only little, you know, they feel they're being listened to and they're still part of society. You don't try and cut them off even further from society any more than you have to for public safety.
So it can serve a purpose towards integration as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's absolutely important for integration.
And do you think public perception is changing towards prisoners in general and towards allowing them to vote?
Well, I do, actually. I took great heart out of the fact that we managed to turn around. Well, I'm not taking complete credit for it on all my lonesome, of course, but when we first started this battle, 90% or more of the public thought prisoners shouldn't have the right to vote.
Wow.
The most recent Brunton poll only a few weeks ago, and which I think was a major motivator for New Zealand first jumping on board here, was that 54%, I think 53 actually, percent of the public now support the right prisoners having the right to vote. Now, this is a great indicator of what a fair and reasonable people New Zealanders are, because this debate's been had in other countries, such as the United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, much of the European Union, and most of those countries, it's, you know, the voting bans have been overturned by the courts and et cetera for constitutional reasons. In some of these countries, they have the constitutional power to strike laws down. But in New Zealand, it's the only sort of Western democracy where the public have actually changed their perception and they support prisoner voting. I don't think you'll find that anywhere else in the Western world.
For people who think prisons should serve sort of a punitive rather than rehabilitative function, do you think that having the voting limit at 3 years and under strikes a good balance between those sort of arguments?
It does, because in New Zealand the electoral cycle is 3 years, so prisoners doing 3 years, now they're going to be out in society before they're going to be a functioning member of society, well, hopefully a functioning member of society at the time of the next election, you see, so they should be able to have some sort of say in how things are going to be between that and when they get out.
Mm.
You know, because they're the policies they'll be living under when they get out, because they're going to be out within the next 3-year electoral cycle. And the other point where it's got some symmetry is that Kiwis that go overseas for 3 years or more, they lose the right to vote too. So it's pretty hard to argue that, you know, ordinary members of society that go overseas or out of the community, I guess, for 3 years by going overseas, they can't vote, but those who are in prison could.
And I also saw that the last banned unenrolled prisoners from voting when it took away their right.
That's right, because once you take someone off the electoral roll, the simple process of getting back on that electoral roll is very daunting to a lot of people, especially prisoners who have just got out of prison and have got much more important worries on their minds, such as getting adequate housing, employment, income, re-establishing themselves in the community with whānau, etc. They're much more pressing on them when they get out of prison, and they simply lose track of what they've got to go through to get back on the roll.
And speaking of the rights of prisoners, when did you first become interested in this, or when did you first start bringing litigation? Because I hear your nickname, or I hear that you're known as sort of a jailhouse lawyer. When did this interest first come about?
Well, my interest in the law first came about mainly in criminal law. I wasn't impressed with the calibre of legal representation I was seeing by fellow prisoners and for myself. So I thought, you want to play rugby, you've got to learn the rules of the game. Otherwise, you could be the best rugby player in the world and they're going to beat you. Someone that knows the rules is going to beat you every time. So I thought, maybe I better start learning the rules.
What are your plans for the future? More campaigning for prisoners' rights?
See, here's another point that I would like to make. It's not just prisoners' rights. See, prisoners are in the forefront. Like, I suppose an analogy is with soldiers, it could be a war. Let's say it's the war on civil rights, where those that are trying to restrict our civil rights all the time or encroach on them. Well, because prisoners are at the front end of governmental, where the rubber meets the road in terms of governmental authority, they are at the sharp point, right?
Mm.
They are subject to the most restrictions on their rights of any group in the community. Now, if you have difficulty in encroaching on their rights, such as taking their right to vote away or their right to freedom of expression, well, it's going to be much more difficult to take those away from other Kiwis a bit further back in the other trenches behind us. So, in a sense, we're protecting the civil rights. I always saw myself as protecting the civil rights of all New Zealanders, not just prisoners.
And before we wrap up, do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
I'd just like to thank everybody that's given me, enormous support, we've never had any financial support or anything. This has all been completely self-funded. But there's a lot of people giving us, words of encouragement and just reminded us that it's not just the people that want to say to prisoners, you shouldn't have any rights, et cetera, et cetera. There are actually people out there that think about these sort of things sensibly and realise that the best protector of victims, the best way of releasing victims in the future is ensuring that you try and rehabilitate prisoners while they're in prison, and therefore, like, one unrehabilitated prisoner could have another fix at 50 victims. Yeah, so we rehabilitate one is enough, save one victim, so you try and rehabilitate people rather than punish them. We all know that, I hope we all know. If you had a dog and mistreated it and poked it with a stick and annoyed the hell out of it, didn't feed it properly, annoyed it, that dog will probably bite you the first opportunity you get. It's a content, happy dog. And I know it's not a suitable analogy, but it's more than likely going to come up and lick you rather than bite you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.